This is SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Brian Barrett.
All right, joining us now from SB Nation, also covers the Celtics for the Celtics blog, CNLS Media from SB Nation. He's Chris Grenham. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Grenham. Chris, thanks for taking some time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's start with the most recent news, Chris. Jabari Parker is going to go to the Chicago Bulls. The Milwaukee Bucks decided to rescind their qualifying offer to let Jabari negotiate a deal with the Bulls. It's a two-year, $40 million deal. The Bulls get a team option on the second year. It seems like we're taking a chance on a guy like Jabari on a one-year deal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of works for both sides because the Bulls are a young team and they're kind of still getting a feel for what they really have. And so, it's Jabari's a guy with a pretty high ceiling who hasn't really hit that yet in the NBA. So it's kind of a low-risk, high-reward. Obviously, it's a lot of money, but I think he could potentially help them out a lot on the offensive end. And I think for the Bucks, it was just kind of time to move on. Jabari was kind of a little stagnant there, so it worked out, you know, for both sides. It was time for him to leave Milwaukee, and he gets an interesting new fit in Chicago.
Chris, what do you make of the rebuild so far for the Bulls? You add Jabari Parker. Of course, we saw that they drafted Wendell Carter Jr., who's looked a lot better in summer league than people probably assumed. Lauri Markkanen had a really nice rookie season. The LaVine deal looked like it was an overpay, the price that they paid for Zach LaVine. But what do you make so far of their rebuild?
I think it's had mixed reviews, but I think for the most part, I'm in favor of it. You know, I think Chris Dunn is a nice piece. At point guard, he's an older guy, and as long as he can continue trending upward, I think he'd be a good guy running the offense. Lauri Markkanen obviously has a ton of upside and had a great first year. Wendell Carter is an underrated, you know, it's tough to say someone was underrated if they were drafted in the top 10, but his athleticism was pretty overlooked in the draft process, and I watched him. I watched three of the Bulls games in Vegas this past week, and I was really impressed with Carter's footwork on both sides, his awareness, and his athleticism, which was pretty overlooked. So I think the pieces that they have can complement each other really well. It might not result in, you know, say, a winning record, like a very good record in the next year or two, but they're going in the right direction, and I think it's one of the better and more stable rebuilds across the NBA. So I think they're doing a great job right now.
We're chatting with Chris Grenham from SB Nation, also covers the Celtics for CNLS Media and the Celtics blog. He's on Twitter at Chris Grenham. All right, Chris, I'm glad you pointed out that you were in Vegas. So I got a couple of Vegas-related questions as it pertains to the NBA. The first one is, who are maybe the top three guys that stuck out to you as you were watching games there?
Wendell Carter, like I said before, really stuck out in terms of big men. Obviously, big men highlighted this draft class, and I think Wendell Carter was the guy who really was eye-popping if you were watching one of his games. You know, DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley, they were great too, but I think Carter's just overall game impressed me because of the certain question marks that he had on his scouting reports. In terms of guards, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander pretty much blew me away. He gets to the rim with so much ease, which was his job at Kentucky, and he showed that. But again, he's a skinnier kid, and people weren't really sure how that was going to translate. And granted, it is just summer league, but his athleticism and his ease in which he gets to the rim is pretty unbelievable. So he was phenomenal and looks like a really, really good piece for the Clippers. And another guard that stuck out to me, obviously, that everyone's talking about is Trae Young. He's kind of this polarizing player who everyone's fascinated with and getting a lot of Steph Curry comparisons because of his shooting ability, but his passing ability in person is phenomenal. And I know he's a great player and everyone knows that and he's got a lot of potential, but he has court vision that was far and above the best out of any guard in Vegas this past week. So I think, you know, his court vision and passing is already there. The shooting will come and the shot selection will come, but the fact that he's such an elite passer already is pretty remarkable, and it was pretty fun to watch in person.
Yeah, it's crazy. As a rookie, he's already polarizing. You can't have a mixed opinion on him. You either love Trae Young or you really dislike Trae Young, it seems like. All right, other Vegas-related thing, Chris, since you've been out there, is I don't know if you noticed this, but the sportsbook now have the Raptors at even money to land Kawhi Leonard, even with the Spurs. How the heck did they become one of the favorites to land Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah, kind of weird. I mean, this situation just keeps getting weirder and weirder, I feel like. Now, out of nowhere, the Raptors come in. And I think that's been quietly building. I had heard murmurs a couple weeks ago that they were, you know, increasing their, quote-unquote, stake in the Kawhi situation because they felt they had a chance. The Lakers were seeming like more of a long shot, and the Sixers just weren't making much, you know, leeway. They weren't making any progress. So I think once that started becoming a realization that maybe some of these front runners didn't have as good of a chance as everyone thought, they were going to sneak in. I think the Sixers not maybe making as much progress might have something to do with some of their front office connections with the Spurs, and that might lead me to believe that maybe they're concerned about Kawhi's injury more so than other teams, and that's why they're not making as much progress. But I think for the Raptors, you know, you can really make a push here, and they have appealing pieces to give to San Antonio. If, say, they were to get rid of Lowry or DeRozan, obviously that's a group that San Antonio would love to get in return. It would be a funny match having DeMar DeRozan go to the Spurs, but I think it's combined with the lack of push from the rest of the league and the pieces that they can give to San Antonio. It's just kind of a perfect match at the moment, and they're slowly gaining a lot of steam in that front.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to monitor because I know there's a training camp at the end of the month there in Vegas. Kawhi Leonard, obviously, part of that USA team, so it'll be funny to see if he shows up or not. Chris Grenham from SB Nation, follow him on Twitter, at Chris Grenham. He also works for CNLS Media in Boston, Celtics blog as well. All right, Adam Silver this week had his press conference at the Board of Governors, and he said that they're open possibly to a 16-team playoff. Now, obviously, you would need two-thirds of the league's owners to agree to that, and you have a lot of powerful media markets in the Eastern Conference. Any chance, Chris, you ever see this happening?
I don't think in the near future. I think Silver's in a place right now where he's got a pretty good reputation across the league, which is rare for any commissioner, and you know, he's a guy who likes to keep everyone happy, and he keeps everything open. You know, he's talking about the free agency, potentially moving that to midday. He had a lot of things that I think he's just keeping an open playbook, which is smart. He's trying to keep the owners happy. You know, a lot of times owners and commissioners have pretty patchy relationships. For the most part, he's had a pretty good one with the set of owners across the league. So I don't see it happening. It would be fascinating, but I don't see it happening in the near future. Maybe if we get some real drastic change in the next decade, but I don't see it as an imminent thought.
All right, Chris, Jimmy Butler said that he won't sign an extension with the Bulls financially. It doesn't really make sense for him to do it now because he can get more money next offseason. But with Jimmy Butler, we heard him basically in an article with the Chicago Tribune call out the young players on the team. We knew that he wasn't the biggest fan of Andrew Wiggins, but he also described Karl-Anthony Towns essentially of having a nonchalant attitude. Do you think this is going to be it for Jimmy Butler in Minnesota?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I think, you know, Butler kind of has a point. It's a bit of a weird group in Minnesota. And as the season went on, obviously, they had their ups and downs this past year in Minnesota. And I think a lot of that is probably, you know, a result of what was happening in the locker room and what was happening behind the scenes, because clearly it was not pretty. And I think this is kind of the beginning of the end where, middle of this season, you could see potentially someone trying to grab him as a rental, maybe for a playoff push around the trade deadline, saying, well, we won't re-sign him, but if the Timberwolves can get some pieces back, maybe they try and ship him off in the middle of the season. But I do think it's the beginning of the end. I think this will be his last season in Minnesota if he even finishes the year with them. And I think Minnesota is just going to turn their focus on building this team around Karl-Anthony Towns, which would be a good decision, in my opinion. I think that, you know, he's a good guy to build around.
All right, Chris, earlier this week, Rich Paul was on NBA TV during one of the games, and he said that LeBron's decision was a basketball decision. Then he kind of backtracked and said LeBron was doing what wanted to make him happy and all this type of stuff. But say they're not able to pull off the Kawhi Leonard trade, which looks like it's not very far down the road at this particular point in time. How is LeBron going to be dealing with this 3 months into the season when his team isn't one of the better teams in the NBA? Because they can say it's about happiness and all that, but we've seen with LeBron, when his team is struggling, he's not a very happy guy.
Right, yeah, it's almost like everyone, including his party, is underestimating his competitiveness, because obviously we've seen LeBron kind of lose his cool like last year and trade half his team away when things aren't going well. So he's a pretty competitive guy, so it sounds great right now when he wants to be in L.A., his family wanted to be out there, and he's got some business ventures out there. That's totally fair, but say you get a quarter of the way through the year and maybe they're 10 games under 500 and he's got this young group and things aren't really going well, it could get ugly pretty quickly. Not in the sense that, you know, he's going to bail and go somewhere else. Nothing dramatic like that, but it's not going to be pretty if things don't go well, regardless of what Rich Paul is saying, regardless of what LeBron is saying. So it's going to be interesting to watch. If you're a Lakers fan or LeBron, you're going to hope that they get off to a somewhat decent start, because obviously it's a young group. They're not expected to go win a title this year. But if things get rocky, it'll be interesting to see if LeBron does, in fact, stick with this mantra, which I don't think he will.
Chris, a team you're close with, of course, the Boston Celtics, one of the restricted free agent still out there is Marcus Smart, and we've heard there's been a lot of animosity between the two sides on what type of money Marcus is looking for. He's taking meetings with other teams. What's going to end up happening here with Smart?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, this is not the year you want to be a restricted free agent. Obviously, there's just no money out there for those guys, which is tough because a guy like Smart is super valuable to very good teams. If there's a team that's trying to make a playoff push and potentially a title push, he's a really valuable guy. He's one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, and he just brings a kind of tenacious push off the bench that really good teams look for. In terms of the Celtics situation, obviously they have the qualifying offer out there for $6 million. If you were to take that, he would then be an unrestricted free agent next year. He thinks he's worth more than that. He said it at the end of the year. I think he's probably worth somewhere in the low teens, but again, I'm not sure if he's going to get that. The animosity, I don't think it's as bad as everyone thinks. I was watching him talk to Brad Stevens, talk to Danny Ainge in Vegas, and they were laughing. They were dapping each other up. Danny Ainge was messing with Smart's hat. So I don't really think there's as much animosity between those parties as there is potentially between, say, the Celtics and Happy Walters, who is Smart's agent. But I think he's ultimately going to return to Boston just because there's not a lot out there unless a sign-and-trade were to pop up, which potentially could happen with the Nets. I know he met with a couple Nets executives when he was in Vegas. But unless a sign-and-trade like that does, you know, present itself, I think he'll end up taking an offer with the Celtics, whether it's a qualifying one or not, and then we'll see him being a free agent this time next year as well.
All right, Chris, and before I let you go, former Celtic Isaiah Thomas is on like his 15th team in the past 3 months. He now signed with the Nuggets. It's a $2 million deal. After he said he needed to back up the Brinks truck for me, wanted that huge contract, I feel bad for him a little bit, the fact that these injuries have cost him. But what do you expect for Isaiah Thomas in a place like Denver?
You know, it's interesting because they can use a little scoring punch from a guard in that's, you know, not like a Gary Harris or a Murray or something like that. But it's tough to watch a guy who's in line for a max deal and then a year later he's getting a veteran minimum. That's tough. But I think it's going to be a place where he can find his resurgence. He's not going to have the crazy pressure and all the eyes on him like he did in L.A. I think that was part of the issue there. He went there, he's expected to continue to score 25 a game, and it just didn't add up with their team. Now that he's had some time away from being that, you know, 25-point scorer per game, the pressure's off and he can kind of have a little IT revenge tour in Denver. And there's less pressure there, and I just think it's a better environment for him to do so. I don't know, because of Jokic and some of their other guys, they've got a pretty talented group, and I think they'll make the playoffs in a pretty tough Western Conference. But there's less pressure. And so I think for him, that takes some of the heat off, and he can kind of relax himself and go do his thing and go get buckets. That's what IT loves to do. So I think it's a perfect environment.
Yeah, that Nuggets team is going to be interesting. They could be winning games like 140 to 135. They play no defense.
Oh, yeah, there's not going to be a lot of defense.
No, they will score a lot, though. That's Chris Grenham from SB Nation. You can also check out his stuff for CNLS Media in Boston and Celtics blog as well. Hey, Chris, thanks so much for the time, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, great talking to you. Have a good one.
All right, great stuff there from Chris. Yeah.